Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay, judges. That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo! Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always the great answer.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back Nine Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader, who wasn't here last week. So shout out to Kieran Clark, the European guru who covered for him. Very good. Thank you, Kieran, for being here. But Fred is back after sacrificing himself playing golf for the benefit of the show. Welcome back, Fred. How are you today?
It's great to be back, Carlos. It was great to have a week off, and I got to tell you, I really was suffering while you guys were doing the show. I was in a really nice restaurant at the end of Bay Harbor, looking out the window at the sunset over Little Traverse Bay. It was tough. It was hard work, but I managed to get through it. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about more later. But
Carlos, you're making me cry.
I know. I'm sorry. We'll get the tissues. The FedEx Cup playoffs started this week. Can you believe that? The Web.com Tour final starts this week. High school football last week. The college season began this week. It's time for Labor Day festivities, which you know what that means. It signals an end to the summer in the northern portion of the United States. Carlos, as I was mentioned, got to visit some great golf resorts in northern Michigan last week, and I can report that golf is alive and doing just fine in that state. But here's what leads our broadcast tonight. The FedEx Cup playoffs began with Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson putting on one of the best shows all year at the Northern Trust. Sungyeong Park won again on the LPGA Tour. I know you're happy about that. Web.com Tour awarded 20. What's that?
Oh, yes.
Web.com Tour awarded 25 new PGA Tour cards, and the Tour final series begins this week in Columbus. Plus, we're going to discuss the declining viewership of network golf. So we got a lot of things to talk about tonight, Carlos, all of them about golf. So let's go. Let's get to it.
Say it isn't so that there's declining on the viewership. No, well, I won't give it away.
It's going south in a hurry.
No, it's not. We'll see. We'll talk about that. That's what we are going to be saying there. Talking about on the practice range, but we also have our VIGs, very important guests of the week is the America's Golfing couple, Danny and Ali Scott. You don't want to miss that. Fred, hook up with them, and they have a great interview for us. But as usual, we start with the weekend backspin. Fred, I still cannot get out of my mind Dustin Johnson's tee shot on the 18th. I cannot. That was amazing, man. Good. What happened there at the Northern Trust?
You know, I was in an outing here in Toledo on Monday, and with Evan Scholars, actually. And you know what everybody was talking about, right? The topic of conversation was Dustin Johnson's drive in the playoffs. That got everybody's attention big time. Well, anyhow, the FedEx Cup playoffs began last week with the Northern Trust Championship, which was held on Long Island in New York. It did not fail to impress, bringing us some of the best golf we have seen all year, although nobody on Long Island bothered to go over and watch it. Jordan Spieth gave up a 3-shot lead to Johnson on Sunday that yielded some of the most dramatic golf of the year. Spieth stretched his lead to 5 shots after birdies at 2 and number 5, but gave those 2 shots back when his tee shot on a par 3, 6th, found the water short of the green, resulting in a double bogey. Anyone remember Augusta National 12th hole? Jordan added another bogey at the 9th while Dustin made a birdie. Spieth's lead was down to a single stroke. Johnson birdied number 10 to draw even with Spieth, both par 11 and 12, and made birdie at 13 to stay even. Spieth regained his lead with a birdie at number 14, but Johnson bounced back with his own birdie at 15. Tied yet again, both men found the bunker at 17. DJ struck a beautiful sand shot to a couple of feet. Spieth made a clutch 18-foot par putt to tie the hole to remain tied with Johnson going to the last. This was really good, Carlos. We were texting back and forth. We were going, wow, can you believe it? Man, this is great. Spieth split the fairway at the last, but DJ's overcut his drive and found the thick rough on a downhill lie. He was hitting to an uphill green with a forced carry over sand. He decided to lay up to 92 yards and depend on his wedge game. If you remember, Dustin's wedge game, coupled with his booming drives, are what made him so dominating over the past year. Plus, he spent some extra time on the range working on his short shots earlier in the week. Spieth nearly shanked his approach to the right side of the green, but got up and down for his four. Johnson hit a tremendous wedge, but the ball rolled out 15 feet past the hole. Spieth, facing a 75-foot putt, knocked it close, got it in. DJ then made his long par save, and they had to go to extra holes. Johnson took over in the playoff. With a wind change, he was able to bomb a drive straight over the lake, 341 yards, leaving just 75 yards of the green on a 476-yard par 4. Unbelievable. Not everyone was happy with the 18th, especially when it was used as a playoff hole. Several players took to Twitter to complain about the 18th hole after Dustin Johnson was able to outdrive Spieth by only 100 yards. Ian Poulter, never won at a loss for words, Kevin Kisner and Wesley Bryan took to Twitter to complain. Pulse posted, shame on at FedEx, playoff hole had to be on the worst hole of the golf course. 18th hole suited five guys in the field. Congrats, DJ, unlucky Jordan. Wesley Bryan said, if you fly at 315, then you have a 100-yard wide fairway on 18. It's a shame that it ended because of a long drive contest in the playoff. Kevin Kisner simply posted, worst hole ever. I don't think these guys like that hole very much. Number one in the FedEx Cup heading into the Northern Trust, Hideki Matsuyama. Who? Hideki Matsuyama, Carlos, missed the cut and dropped to number four on the FedEx Cup ranking, headed to the Dell Championship. John Rahm collected a tie for third and put himself squarely in the FedEx Cup race at number five. Remember, the top five heading to the Tour Championship can win the $10 million with a win in that final event. Johnny Vegas is playing great at the right time. He finished tied with Rahm for third, which assured a President Cup spot on the international team. He also moves up to number 10 in the FedEx Cup race, pretty much assuring himself a big payday by making it all the way to the final 30 for the Tour Championship. Paul Casey had another strong week with a solo fifth. There were a couple of other interesting names at T6, just kind of lurking there. Tied with Webb Simpson and Kevin Chappell were Jason Day and Justin Thomas. And Carlos, here's one of these moments. You might want to write this down. I'm going to go out on a limb, but I like Justin Thomas to win it all, if not Jordan Spieth or Dustin Johnson. I like his attitude and fearlessness. Plus, is Jason Day finally healthy enough to compete again? That's what we want to see this week and going forward. Bubba Watson got a bit of a shock. He was looking to head home for a long season, but a long off season. But he's going to have to stick around one more week as his tie for 10th moved him up 41 spots to number 72. He'll need another good week in Boston to move inside the top 70 to make it to the BMW in 2 weeks. Only the top 70 after the Dell Championship will move on in Chicago to Chicago after a one-week respite for the players. Bubba was just one of three players to move in the top 100 to continue FedEx Cup playoffs. David Lingworth and Harold Varner were the other two. Well, if three got in, that meant that three fell out, and those guys were Robert Garrigus, Sunil Noh, and Benny Ahn. So they can start their offseason now. The FedEx Cup will end with the Tour Championship September 17th through 21st, and then the President's Cup will be held the following week at Liberty National in New Jersey, across the river from Manhattan. We're going to have a ton of big-time golf to talk about over the next month, Carlos. We're really looking forward to it.
Let me tell you, let me start by answering about Hideki Matsuyama. I'm just going to tell you.
I knew you'd have to say something about that.
No, it's just that you say who. Well, I'm going to ask you about who in 2015 missed the two cuts in the first two tournaments of the FedEx Cup and won it. Who was that?
Was it Horschel?
Right.
Did he? Okay.
He missed the
cut. The first two cuts?
The first two, and then he won it because he won the last one over Henrik Stenson. Okay. So don't worry about Hideki. You know,
don't worry about Hideki.
He's okay. He missed the cut, but that's okay. I mean, he'll get back to it. He has a lot to prove. You'll see. But anyway, all I have to say about this, because you basically covered everything, I know these players were complaining about the 18, but it wasn't DJ's fault that the wind changed at that time. I mean, he in the first time they reached 18, he didn't go over the water. He couldn't. That's why he didn't do it. But even as soon as he lined up, and then I remember now what Jordan Spieth says, you know what, going back now, I would have tried to go over the water as well. Yeah, when you saw that DJ did it, but unfortunately he was going.
Yeah, but I don't think he could have made it. I mean, it you had to carry it, what, 310 or something like that? I don't know that Jordan's got that in his bag. Does he even?
I don't think he has it, but he said that he was, because the wind was blowing that way. So I don't know if he would have made it or not. But that's why when he says that he would have chosen to do that, if he would have been second after seeing DJ do it, I still don't think, like you say, I don't think that he would make it. He has to carry it 315. So yeah, there were few players in the field that could have done it. DJ, of course, was one, but he didn't even think about it. I remember my wife was watching it with me, and she said, he's lining up wrong. He's lining up to the other side. And I said, no.
I love it.
He's lining up because he thinks he can carry the water, so that's why he's lining up that way. And then when he bumped it, he didn't even flinch. He carried he took the club, the driver, and he just swung it back like, hey, I know I was going to make it. So it was like
he made a massive swing there. Did you see the recoil on that thing, though? I mean, he went after that hard.
Yeah, he was like, this is not going to get into the water. I might go over the fairway, but I'm not going to stay short. And then he said it. He just had a 60-degree wedge afterwards, and it was over. I mean, when he got it over the water that close, you knew that Spieth needed. He was not going to be able to stop that ball on the green with that distance, 181, that he had. He was not going to.
Six iron. Yeah,
nah, he was
six iron versus a 60-degree. 60-degree is going to win about 8 out of 10 times on that deal.
Yep. So I mean, it wasn't going to happen. But DJ won it, I guess, when he did that par putt. I mean, he had everything going against him.
Yeah.
Even though Spieth was outside, he did that. He did that putt very confidently. He knew that he was going to be able to two putt for par. I don't know if you remember the way that he putted, and he started walking the putt right after it. He knew where the ball was going. It was going to be short, and he was going to have that par putt afterwards. And he knew that DJ was in trouble. He had to do that long par putt, but DJ sank it, and wow, what a playoff. I mean, what a tournament. This is really, like you said, this is what golf needs, and it was a great duel for the players that are now ranked 1 and 2 in the world, as well as 1 and 2 on the FedEx Cup standings. And the pair will be playing the first two rounds together next week at this week's Dell Technologies. We'll talk about that later. The player that I want to mention is Rory McIlroy, who would have been one of those players that could have been able to carry that water in the 18.
Yeah.
He finished in the tie 34th. Fully 15 shots behind Spieth and Johnson, and he said that his game isn't where he needs to be, but he says, well, it's okay, and that the conditions were tricky out there, and that only his battling qualities, that is really all he has right now. So it's really bad to see that Rory McIlroy, who could have been another show here playing, especially in this and the Glen Oaks Club that suited him, that he wasn't able to put on that show. But hopefully We'll see. I mean, I don't think he's going to be competing well the rest of the playoffs. So, unfortunately.
Now, he said the problem is that he can't practice. He starts to practice. He can't practice hard or long. As soon as it starts to hurt, he has to quit. And it's very frustrating for him because he can't put the time in on the range and in practice that he needs. So the game is just not sharp, and he's just trying to get it around and get it done and, you know, finish in the tour championship. And then, you know, he's going to not play in the – I guess he's going to play in the Dunhill, and then he's going to take the rest of the year off. He's not even going to play in the race to Dubai.
Right, right. Right, he's just gonna play because of the agreement he had to play there downhill, but that's about it. So anyway, anything else you want to add about the Northern Trust before I talk about who I wanted to talk today?
No, just the fact that what a great way to start off the FedEx Cup playoffs. Oh. I think I might mention it here again later, but I mean that's exactly what that thing needs is some dramatic play. And I'm going to get into that later in the TV stuff, so I'm not going to talk any more about it now.
Yeah, I'm going to hold my thought about that for that issue, for the practice ring. So anyway, let's talk about the LPGA, the Canadian Pacific Women's Open Championship. Ha. If you thought there was still some remote possibility for anybody else to be the Rookie of the Year on the LPGA, forget about it. I mean, give her the trophy right now, Angel Jin. I mean, I like you a lot, but you have no chance. Sung Yun Park. So, I'll talk about the stats in a little while. But anyway, Sung Yun Park. She claimed the second victory during her rookie year on the LPGA Tour, winning the title on Sunday in Ottawa. As you might remember, the U.S. Women's Open title last month was her first win on the LPGA Tour, so this is the second. And she closed the tournament with a birdie on the 18th hole to cap a 7-under par 64. That's how you go out and win a tournament. That left her with a 2-stroke victory over South Korean compatriot Miriam Lee. Park entered the final round at the Ottawa Hampton Golf Club, trailing leaders Nicole Bruck Larson of Denmark and American Mo Martin, who was playing excellent by 4 shots, but she erased the deficit to finish at 13-under, 271 for 72 holes. Park had 5 birdies in that 8-hole stretch, which was from number 3 to number 10, and she also birdied a par 4 16 before her closing birdie on the par 5 18. In Sunday's final round, Park avoided making bogey and birdied 2 of her final 3 holes. Miriam Lee, who finished second, had 2 eagles in a 68 to gain sole possession of second place. Brock Larson closed with a 70 to fall into a tie for third at 274 with Shanshan Fang of China, who had a final round of 68, Marina Alex, 68, Christy Kerr, 69, and Ingi Chun of South Korea with a 70. For Marina Alex, who we mentioned pre-Solheim Cup that she had a great chance to make the team, she didn't, and that might have served a little bit as an inspiration since she finished T3rd and was her career best on the LPGA Tour the week after the Solheim Cup. For Ingi Chun, it was her 6th top 3 finish of the season. Mo Martin, oh man, she was going so good, but she wound up at 275 after 72, tied for 8th with Jane Park, who 65 was one of the best rounds of the day, and South Korea, Hyo Kim, who had a 66. Canadian star, Brooke Henderson, she followed her course record of 63 on Saturday with a 71 for a tie for 12th at 7-under. You know, the 19-year-old major champ is from nearby Smith Falls, and she was a big crowd favorite this past weekend. I mean, she had the crowds going with her. I thought it was Tiger Woods playing, but it was Brooke Henderson. They were following her big time. She finished tied with South Korea's Soyeon Ryu, who, as you all know, is ranked number 1 in the world, American Stacey Lewis, and South Korea's Mi Young-ho. Michelle Wee, man, she was tied for 23rd after the 3rd round, but she had to withdraw and then was taken to the Ottawa Hospital to have surgery to remove her appendix. More on that a little bit later, as I have some news on that a little bit later on the Par 5 News. But Park joined her countryman, I.K. Kim, with 3 victories, and Soyeon Ryu with 2 as the only multiple winners. Park has 10 career LPGA victories, and she was looking forward to see her duck Atto at her Florida base during a two-week break, and this will give her time to think her strategy for the end of the season, because she is in the running for it to sweep all of the season's best, biggest honors. And if you don't know what that means, I mean, she's second to Seo Yun Ryu and the Rolex Player of the Year, just 20 points behind her, and she already passed IK Kim by 12. She is right now leading by more than half for the Louis Salk Rolex Rookie of the Year. She's 1,285 points, and Angel Jin is a distant 539. So, I mean, there's no way Angel Jin can catch her. Give her a trophy. The race to the CME Globe, Seo Yun Ryu has 2,652. Lexi Thompson is 10 behind, and Song Yeon Park is 2,563. She's just 90 points behind Seo Yun Ryu on this race to the CME Globe. And after that, the scoring average, Lexi Thompson is the leader with 68.98. Seo Yun Park, 69, just 0.02 behind Lexi Thompson in the scoring average. And she's the leader right now on the money list with 1.878 million, leading Seo Yun Ryu by over $100,000. So she is definitely in the run to not only be, she's already the Rookie of the Year, but she could sweep for the first time, would be the one to sweep all of the season's biggest honors.
Yeah, that's Lydia Ko-like, isn't it? And speaking of Lydia and Aria, both of those guys missed the cut, huh?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, they did. They did, definitely. So that's something that I can understand Lydia, but Aria is also another one that is starting to go back a little bit. I don't know what's going on with Aria. Lydia, we all know her problems right now, but Aria is really starting to get into that as well. So not good, but hey, there's a lot of other star power there. Song Yeon Park is one. Seo Yun Ryu is there. You know, Brooke Henderson is starting to play well again. So there's plenty of star power there in the LPGA.
Well, they're in Portland this week, right? So Brooke Henderson, I mean, this is her time of year. She won there. I mean, she keeps winning there every year. I'm sure you're going to talk about that later. But, hey, Carl, let's just talk about the Champions Tour. Jerry Kelly posted a tournament record, 19 under par, to win the Bowling Classic at the club of Snoqualmie Ridge outside of Seattle. He opened with a 65 for a share of the lead, followed by a 66 on Saturday to open up a three-shot advantage heading to the final round. This was Kelly's 13th start on the PGA Tour, the Champions Tour, after turning 50 last November. Jerry Smith made it interesting with a final round 64. He could have tied Kelly on the final hole, but his 8-foot birdie missed, and Kelly tapped in for the win. This German guy, Bernhard Langer, he had a birthday on Sunday, turned 60. That Bernhard Langer guy, I'll be Bach. He has just run away with the Charles Schwab Cup well before the season's over. With the final round 65, he tied Billy Mayfair for third at 16 under. Langer won here in 2010 and again in 2016 with four victories this year. Three of those majors, the German star has locked up his record fifth and fourth consecutive Charles Schwab Cup. Only guy ever to do that, Carlos.
Wow. Bernhard Langer, and he's running on his own there, and the race is just for second. Hey, let's talk about.
They're gonna have to change the name of the Champions Tour to the Bernhard Langer Annuity, something like that.
Yeah, definitely, most definitely. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the European Tour. American Julian Suri, he held off England's David Horsey in the final round in the mate in Denmark at the Himmerland Golf and Spa Resort. The American carded a flawless 64 to finish four ahead of his nearest challenger. Suri started the final round two back of Horsey, but after the Englishman bogeyed the first and Suri birdied the second, the pair were tied at the top of the board. The American then took the lead on his own with further birdies at the third and fourth holes, but Horsey wasn't finished and made gains of his own to rejoin Suri at the top of the pile. Both men made birdies at the 12th to reach 18 under par, but Missouri took the lead on his own once more with a brilliant putt for birdie on the 13th. The advantage remained just one until the final hole, where Horsey found trouble and wound up recording a triple bogey 7. Missouri had no such issues, and he made a steady par to take the victory. He was delighted to make his European Tour breakthrough. As for Horsey, despite his poor finish, he held on to solo second place. His fellow Englishmen Ben Evans, Chris Paisley, and Steve Webster were tied for third. John Daly was playing there, and he had a good week.
Who?
As he finished, John Daly. And he finished in a tie for 10th place. John Daly. Isn't he playing the Champions Tour?
I believe so.
For the 26-year-old Suri, he claimed victory in just his 7th European Tour event. He now joins Peter Uihlein and Brooks Koepka as the American players who have won on both the Challenge and European Tours. It was a great week for the English players. I mean, David Horsey was unable to repeat his maiden Denmark victory of 2015, but he held on to second place and was one of 7 English players to finish in the top 10. The others, as I said, were Ben Evans, Chris Paisley, Steve Webster, but also Matt Wallace, Adam Rye, and Robert Rock. Adam Rye, who I mentioned last week from the Challenge Tour, who got the automatic promotion to the European Tour, is starting to make his mark here also on the European Tour. Thomas Bjorn, he made the cut in his 500th European Tour event and finished on 4 under par. The Dane enjoyed a great week in front of his home fans, but he's now turning his attention to his Ryder Cup captaincy and the matches in Paris next September, with the qualification process starting this week at the D&D Rio Czech Masters. And some other results there on the European Senior Tour. Former Ryder Cup player Barry Lane, he secured his 6th European Tour Senior Tour title as he carded the final round 5 under par 67 to win the Willow Senior Classic by 5 strokes. In addition to the lowest round in Senior Tour history, Lane's 22 under par is also the lowest 54-hole score to par, the lowest since 2010. Then Gary Orr, who finished second, who finished with a 17 under par, 2 strokes ahead of former John Jacobs Trophy winner Port Wessingly, who topped the Senior Tour Order of Merit in 2013. Roger Chapman, double senior major championship champion in 2012, finished 4th on 13 under par with Peter Fowler, Chris Williams, and Thorthorne Wirecat, chairing 5th on 18 under. And on the Challenge Tour, Pedro Oriol, he claimed a maiden European Challenge Tour victory with a Rolex trophy by overcoming Adrian Sadier in a playoff at the Golf Club de Geneve, and credited a trip to the legendary Seve Ballesteros house for inspiring his success. The Spaniard, who moves up to 3rd on the Road to Oman rankings, fired a 7-under par finals round of 65 to set the clubhouse target on 17-under par before Sadier missed a putt to win, bogeying the last to set up the first playoff of the season. Oriol's maiden win comes almost exactly 8 years after he turned pro, but it was his recent visit to his friend Javier Ballesteros, who is the son of the golfing great, that was closest to his mind as he toasted his dramatic victory. Adding to the great day for Spanish golf was Scott Fernandez, whose closing 65 took him to 16 under par and into a chair of 3rd place alongside Italy's Lorenzo Gagli. Ryan Evans lived up to his newly acquired top 10 nickname by tying for 5th place with Michael Lundberg, with Foos dropping a couple of shots late in his round on his way to 7th spot. Fred, the Challenge Tour still has 8 tournaments to go, so they're far from over. But already we saw that Adam Rye is doing great. He won 3 times there to earn the automatic promotion, and he's doing very good already in his short time in the European Tour. And Julian Suri, who's number 2, just won on the European Tour, so now he already had secured, because of his 2nd place on the Challenge Tour, he had secured his card for next year for the European Tour, but now he more than made it by winning this past week.
Yeah, things are wrapping up everywhere, but we got the Web.com Tour that wrapped up their regular season last week at the Winco Foods Portland, and 25 new PGA Tour members were awarded their 2018 Tour cards after the final tournament of the 2017 Web.com Tour regular season. Bryce Garnett, who entered the week with a win last month at the Utah Championship, posted rounds of 71, 67, 63, 65 for 18 under to win by four shots over David Skins, Sam Ryder, Ben Silverman, and Abraham Answer. The $144,000 first place check pushed Garnett up to number one on the Web.com Tour money list with $368,000 in season earnings. So he's going to have the top priority in getting into PGA Tour events next year. Garnett will be returning to the big tour after spending the 2013 and 2016 seasons on the PGA Tour. For every winner, there's usually a loser. Mexico's Roberto Diaz nervously watched the leaderboard and earned the 25th and final card with $157,823 in earnings. Diaz entered the week at number 24 and left his fate in the hands of Keith Mitchell after a T43 finish. Mitchell, who entered Sunday's round tied to lead, needed to birdie the par 5 18th to earn his PGA Tour card, but failed to get up and down from the left of the green and wound up number 26 on the money list. The closing par allowed Diaz to claim that card. Numbers 126 to 200 on the FedEx Cup rankings on the PGA Tour now join the top 75 from the Web.com Tour for the Web.com Tour Final Series to determine who will be awarded an additional 25 PGA Tour cards for next year. A few familiar names to lock up PGA Tour status for next year: Kyle Thompson, Andrew Putnam, Chesson Hadley, and Bo Hosler. And, Carlos, there's going to be a Shank on the PGA Tour next year, as Adam Shank ended the year at number 12 to earn his card. So, what an unfortunate golf name that is, Adam Shank.
Yeah, I would try also to have like a nickname or something like that to
help. Yeah, I would have changed that, baby. Yeah. Also, I want to mention just real briefly, Carlos, U.S. Senior Am's going on up in Minneapolis this week. They completed medalist play on Sunday. They start on Saturday for the two rounds of medalist play to determine the 64 that advance. And David Brown of Ligonier, Pennsylvania, won the medalist honors by posting 6-under par for the two rounds at the Minicata Club in Minneapolis. Brown, 56, who is competing in his first U.S. Senior Amateur, topped a trio of players by two strokes to earn the number one seed for match play. 12 players, they had to have a big playoff. They couldn't get her done on Sunday night. They had to come back on Monday morning. They had 12 players competing for 7 spots for the match play. 4 men made bogey on the very first playoff hole, and one more was eliminated on the second playoff hole to finalize the 64-man field for match play. So after today, they had the round of 16 today. So the top 8 that will go into the quarters tomorrow and then the semis in the afternoon: David Nocar from Maryland, Sean Knapp from Pennsylvania, Ken Lee from Tennessee, Dave Ryan from Illinois, Matt Sugar from Virginia, Paul Simon from North Carolina, John Pierce from Texas, and Frank Vanna from Massachusetts won in 19 holes over Alan Hill from Texas. The champion will be crowned on Thursday. That's when the finals will be. It'll be on Fox for sure, Carlos.
And with that, we'll wrap up our week in backspin. Now let's talk about the four call or the quick previews for this week in action. And Fred, the FedEx Cup playoffs continue with the Dell Technologies Championship. Go ahead. What's going on with it?
Yeah, the only thing better from last week is if we could get Rory involved, if he could get to playing well, we could get Jason Day up there, we get Ricky Fowler involved, we get along with Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson. Wouldn't that be fun? But Rory is the defending champion at the Dell Championship this week, the second leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs. It's going to be held at the TPC of Boston. It's going to be a little different this week with Labor Day weekend. The Dell starts on Friday and ends on Monday. Plus, the coverage switches to NBC for the balance of the playoffs and the President's Cup the week following the end of the playoffs. Only the top 100 have advanced to the Dell Championship to challenge the par 71, 7,300-yard TPC Boston layout, and only 70 will advance to the BMW Championship to be held 2 weeks from now. If Adele can match the drama Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson provided at the Northern Trust last week, the FedEx Cup playoffs may begin to generate the type of excitement Tim Finchen envisioned when he created them in 2007. So, Carlos, we're on the second leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs. It'll be half over on Monday. The season's winding down quick.
I remember in 2013 when Jordan Spieth closed with a 62 at the TPC Boston to tie for fourth, and that landed him a spot on the President's Cup at
yep.
the age of 20. That was incredible yep. that year, Jordan Spieth, 2013. Hey, let's talk about the LPGA Tour. The Cambia Portland Classic is going to be played at the Columbia Edgewater Country Club in Portland, Oregon. The course yardage is 6,476 yards and plays at a par 72. It has a purse of $1.3 million. First prize of $195,000. The defending champions, Brooke Henderson, and the LPGA money leader, Sungjae Park. Park joined, like I said, IK Kim and Sungjae Ryu as the only multiple winners on the LPGA Tour this year, and she moved atop the money list. All three players have won majors this year. All three are here playing. Park has twice as many points as LPGA Tour Rookie of the Year. Rookie of the Year race, Dan Angel Jin. She's also only 20 points between Ryu for Player of the Year. While she's in LPGA rookie, she won six times on the Korean LPGA last year and four times before that, and she continues to see her progress here. Lexi Thompson is playing the Portland Classic for the first time. Michelle Wee, as we mentioned, she's recovering from surgery, so she's not going to be here. She had to withdraw as well. Brooke Henderson will try to become the first player ever to win the Portland Classic three straight years. Annika Sonnenstam had a chance to do it in 2004 for the third straight at Columbia Edgewater, but she finished two shots behind Hee Woo Han, so she couldn't do it. She'll hear in a second. Let's see if Brooke Henderson, who's playing really well, can do it. Se-young Kim became the seventh player this year to go over $1 million in earnings this season, and she will also be playing here. So the women's are also starting to go down the wire. They're playing before the Evian Championship, which is the last tournament, the last major on the ladies' season. So we'll see what happens there, Fred.
Let's talk a little bit about the Web.com Tour. We briefly mentioned it. The Nationwide Children's Hospital Championship at Scarlet Course at the Ohio State University Golf Club was designed by Alistair McKenzie and updated by Jack Nicklaus in 2007. It was just announced today that the Web.com Tour and Nationwide agreed to a new three-year pact to continue hosting this event at Ohio State University. First stop on the Web.com Tour Final Series, 25 PGA Tour cards plus improved status are up for grabs over the next 4 weeks. Major names from the PGA Tour's 126 through 200 list, Ryo Ishikawa, you talked about him a couple weeks ago. We haven't seen him around lately. Sam Saunders, Carlos Ortiz, Ken Duke, Martin Piller, Jarena Piller's better half, Jonathan Bird, Daniel Summerhays, Will McKenzie, I think he's in this thing every year, Ricky Barnes, same thing there, Zach Blair, Curtis Luck, Hunter Mahan, and Peter Uihlein are all going to be down here at Columbus this week. 40-year-old Scott Gashevsky, who was one of our early guests on the Back Nine Report way back, along with 48-year-old Dickie Pride, who won the 1994 St. Jude FedEx, are both trying to get back to the PGA Tour one more time, are also playing in the Tour Final Series. The other factor in the Web.com Tour Final Series are the 25 players who have already earned their PGA Tour cards for next year who are trying to improve their status on the PGA Tour and get into more events next year with high finishes, Carlos. So, Web.com is going to come to Columbus three more years. They're starting the Tour Final Series, and a lot of big names in it this year that are pretty familiar.
I just want to go before I talk about the European Tour. I received a text asking me about how is Lydia Ko and Nadia Utanagrin, because I mentioned that they're not doing well. How have they been playing? Well, just to mention, Lydia Ko has missed the cut in two of her last three starts. With the other, she finished a tie for 59th. And Arya Yutanaran, which is the one that is concerning right now, has missed a cut in 5 of her last 6 starts. So she's definitely, if Lydia's not hot, she's really super cold right now with those missed cuts in 5 of her last 6 starts. So anyway, talking a little bit now about the European Tour, they're going to be playing the D&D Real Czech Masters. That's going to be in Prague in the Czech Republic at the Albatross Golf Resort with a 1 million euros purse. The defending champion is Paul Petersen, and the Race to Dubai leader is Tommy Fleetwood. This is the first event for Europeans to start earning Ryder Cup points for next year's matches in France. Renato Paratori, Jordan Smith, and Dylan Fritelli were 3 of the most promising young European stars are in the lineup with their sights in getting early bird points for the Ryder Cup. All 3 are 27 years old or younger, and whilst they have taken different routes to get to the tour, each have picked up their maiden victories already this season, so it's good to see them there. And they're going to be lined up for the first 2 days, teeing it up together. They're going to be paired up in the same threesome. The U.S., and listen to this, the U.S. has produced more official European Tour victories this year than any other country, and the defending champion, American Paul Petersen, will try to become the first player to successfully defend the title he won here last year by a single shot over Thomas Peters for his first victory in just his 23rd start on the tour. Another notable American, Julian Suri, who we just mentioned, last week's winner on the tour, will look to make it back-to-back wins. Another, and maybe the most notable American on the field, here it is, Red, John Daly, tied for 10th last week in Denmark and moved up 740 spots in the world ranking, Fred. He moved 740 spots in the world rankings. You know how high he's ranked right now in the world, John Daly?
Probably about 300.
He is number 1,126. So he's moving right up. Yes.
Wow.
But he moved to 140 spots. He moved to 140 spots. You got to give it to him. I mean, he's moving up.
Man.
So
can you see John Daly in Czechoslovakia? You talk about culture shock. Can you see some Czech guy here trying to talk to him or figure him out or something?
I can assure you that he's going to blend in perfectly because all the colors that they're in those pastel colors that are in Czechoslovakia go right along with the way that he dresses. So he'll be melting right along. But he's going to play there with another major champions, former major champion Martin Keimer. He's going to be also Lee Westwood. Darren Clark is going to be there. Last year's runner-up and champion 2 years ago, Thomas Peters, is also in the lineup. He's another promising young star, Matthew Fitzpatrick, that is going to be also there. Fred, as for the tournament, I can say that Pelly keeps signing them up. They just signed an extension that will keep it in the European Tour schedule through 2023. So, hey, the real D&D Czech Masters is going to be around for a little while.
The Champions Tour is up north of the border in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, for the Shaw Charity Classic. It's the 19th of 26 Charles Schwab Cup events. They'll play at the par 70, 7,086-yard Canyon Meadows Golf and Country Club. The field's limited to 78 players with 54 holes of stroke play. No cut, total purse of $2,350,000, with $352,000 going to the winner. Carlos Franco won this thing last year. He came in at 18 under par, defeated who else? Bernhard Langer and Michael Allen by 2 shots. This thing is not going to be live on television. It's going to be tape delayed all 3 days on the Golf Channel. Friday and Saturday's telecast will be from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., while Sunday is slated for 5 to 7 p.m. So no live coverage of the Champions Tour in Canada. You got to watch it tape delayed in prime time.
And to close up, there's going to be action in virtually everywhere in the world. Japan is going to be playing McKinsey Tour in Canada. The PGA Tour Latin America is going to be playing there in Nicaragua. The PGA Tour Australasia will have a tournament there in Australia. The Challenge Tour has the Cordon Golf Open. It's going to be in France, in Penou, France. The Korean PGA is going to be having also a tournament. The Sunshine Tour, you just mentioned the U.S. Senior Amateur at the Minicala Club in Minneapolis, where the defending champion Dave Ryan is there. And the European Senior Tour, Travis Perkins Master, is going to be playing in England. The Symetra Tour is still playing there. The Sioux Falls Great Life Challenge is going to be played in Sioux Falls in South Dakota. The Korean LPGA and the Japan LPGA have tournaments. So all 11 of the other minor tours have action this weekend. So there's a lot of golf, even though of the major tours are winding down, those are still going. So with that, we wrap up our four call and now move on to the Par 5 news, where we have five pieces of news for you. And Fred, as usual, you have the tee shot, and you're going to talk about changing of the guard at Augusta National.
Yeah, before I get to that, Carlos, a couple things real quick. We mentioned the Minicata Club a couple times there tonight. And a piece of history here that I'm going to impart to our fans came across yesterday. In 1916, Chick Evans won the U.S. Open at the Minicata Club in Minneapolis. He was an amateur, refused to turn professional. Matter of fact, refused the check. The check finally went to a trust that he set up that became the Evans Scholars Foundation. And 14 years later, 1930, the first two students were enrolled at Northwestern University in the Evans Scholars program. They funded their tuition. They were former caddies who qualified for the Evans Scholarship. Since then, over 10,000 have gone through the program, earned their college degrees through the Evans Scholar program. Currently, there's about 980-some young people across the United States that are attending college because Chick Evans started this foundation. Also, what's kind of remarkable about that, too, is that Chick Evans also won the U.S. Amateur in 1916. And he's only one of two men to have won both the U.S. Amateur and the U.S. Open in the same year, the other being Bobby Jones. So there's a little statue there, I understand, at the Minicata Club of Chick Evans. So there's your little piece of history for the night, Carlos. And also I want to mention that we posted a new show on Back 9 Report TV. It's on Roku. If you have access to Roku, R-O-K-U, search for Back 9 Report TV, the number 9, and view episode number 6. We talk about some of the latest news and some items in the golf world. And also, the August issue of NWO Golf Links is still out there. You can find that at nwo.back9mediagroup.com with the number 9 in there. The September issue will be coming out the second Wednesday of September. We're going to feature Gaylord Golfneck on the cover on that one. So, Carlos, that's just a little bit of addition there. So let's get into the Par 5 news. And you were right. There is big news coming out of Augusta National as Billy Payne announced his retirement as the chairman of Augusta National. And Fred Ridley will assume the chairmanship. Payne will be remembered for a long list of accomplishments during his tenure. He may be the third most important chairman at Augusta National after only Bobby Jones and Clifford Roberts, the two founders. He was an All-America football player at Georgia in 1968 and was a key figure in bringing the Olympics to Atlanta in 1996 and was the chairman of those games. Jaime Diaz wrote in Golf World that Payne oversaw one of the most significant eras in Augusta National history. He presided over the admittance of women as members to the club in 2012. He was instrumental in starting the drive, chip, and putt competition. He helped grow the game globally by offering a spot in the Masters to the winner of the Asia-Pacific Amateur. He helped build an alliance with the PGA Tour, PGA of America, USGA, the RNA, and the LPGA which made Augusta National and the Masters a major player in the overall hierarchy of world golf. Other more recent accomplishments, the new 18-acre practice facility, 400 yards in length, opened in 2010, featuring a state-of-the-art short game area, two fairways with trees and bunkers. It's unbelievable, Carlos. The opening of Berkman's Place in 2013 as a high-end hospitality venue near the fifth hole. He oversaw the removal of the Eisenhower tree in 2014 after an ice storm left it irreparably damaged. He opened a new tournament headquarters and press building last year, or just this spring. They just bought a large strip of land on the adjacent Augusta Country Club that borders Augusta National's 12th and 13th holes that will make it possible to lengthen the par 5 13th by as much as 50 yards. And I understand they're also maybe build a hotel in there, do some other stuff with that additional land. Payne told Diaz, "What I do my very best at everything that I attempt to do. Sometimes it might not be good enough. Sometimes it may be misdirected. Nevertheless, I'm never going to be in a place where lack of effort was the contributing factor in failure. I'm just not going to put myself there." Billy Payne will never be accused of not giving his best and always looking out for Augusta National. So the second part of this, who is Fred Ridley? Well, just a little bit of background. First of all, he's a real estate attorney in Tampa, Florida, who earned his law degree from Stetson in 1977. Ridley is a real golfer. He won the 1975 U.S. Amateur, served as president of the USGA in 2004 and 2005, and becomes just the seventh chairman of Augusta National. Unique note, Ridley was the last U.S. amateur champion to have not turned professional. Did you know that, Carlos? I didn't know that until I read that today. He's the only Augusta National chairman to have actually played in three Masters, 1976, 1977, and 1978. And he's also competed in the U.S. Open and the Open Championship. He served as captain of two Walker Cup teams. He's been involved as chairman of the tournament committee for several years and has been the obvious choice to succeed Payne. He was the forefront of Tiger Woods' ruling in 2013 when Woods was assessed penalty strokes for the following day after reviewing tapes of Woods' drop from a ball that had spun back off the green into Rays Creek at number 15. What a farce that was. Final word, Billy Payne in many ways has brought Augusta National and the Masters into the 21st century. He has presided over one of the most lucrative areas of Augusta National and has cemented its place as one of the bastions in the game of golf. Congrats on your retirement. We hope you're in good health and everything works well. You've left Augusta National and the Masters in great shape for Mr. Ridley, who follows you and the members of Augusta National.
Yeah, and Fred Ridley, I mean, congratulations to him on his new job, and he's now being the chairman, but it's going to be a big shoes to fill. I mean, Billy Payne, like you mentioned, he brought Augusta National out of what was the past, but he still respected tradition, and that's what he praised about, that he preserved those original thoughts from Bobby Jones. All the time he maintained those ideals, but he also looked to put Augusta out of that past into the future and definitely grew it into a Masters, I mean, into a global event. Definitely, we have to say that about Billy Payne. Definitely, it's going to be different to see that press conference next year and not having Billy Payne ahead of the Masters. But hey, have a great time now in your retirement. Let's talk a little bit about the LPGA. I have some news. I have three pieces of news surrounding the LPGA. And the first one is about the Solheim Cup, where more fans watched Team USA beat Team Europe to retain the Solheim Cup than any of the previous 14 cups held both in U.S. and Europe. Fans also spent more money and merchandise than any previous cup. It not only broke records, it shattered them. The West Des Moines staging of the Solheim Cup landed the predicted attendance record, drawing 124,426 fans for the week of events that included the USA's women's victory over Europe. The previous full attendance record was it set in 2009 at the Rich Harvest Farms in Illinois, which also topped 120,000. Friday's crowd at Des Moines Golf and Country Club broke the single-day attendance record, too. More than half of the fans came from outside of Iowa, including 25 countries. They shelled out $2 million for polo shirts, caps, and other merchandise, which was another record. I mean, it's going to be a tough act to follow in 2 years, but amazing what the records that were broken there on the Solheim Cup.
Also, how much did they spend, Carlos, out there?
I'm sorry? Over $2
million. How much did they spend out? How much?
Over $2 million. Over $2
million.
$2 million.
They're coming here in a few years, you know. I got to figure out how to get a piece of that, man. That's some serious coin.
Hey, some polo shirts.
I got to put up a booth.
Cap.
I got to sell some.
I mean, call me. I'll be there helping you on the booth. No problem.
Come on up. I got a place for you to stay. Come on up.
We'll do it. We'll do it. Hey, following up on the Solheim Cup and the LPGA, the European Tour chief executive Keith Pelley has been asked to keep the BMW PGA Championship away from the Solheim Cup when the two events are held in September for the first time in 2 years in 2019. It was announced recently that the circuit's flagship event was moving from its traditional May slot to the autumn in 2 years' time, which is a change that has been instigated by the decision to bring the USPGA Championship forward to the spring. The actual dates for the BMW PGA Championship have still to be confirmed, but Event Scotland, which is preparing the Solheim Cup, has contacted Pelley to request it stays away from the 13th to 15th of September when Glen Eagles will be staging the 16th Solheim Cup. Like I mentioned, a record crowd of just under 125,000 attended last week's match in Des Moines, and while it would be unrealistic to really expect that for the event in Perthshire, every possible step is really being taken to try to ensure the Solheim Cup in Scotland is well supported. Unlike next year, when the men's and women's Scottish Opens, the Open, and the Senior Open Championship will be held at the Sports Cradle over a three-week period, the summer schedule in 2019 will be a lot lighter because the Open Championship is being held in Ireland that year, while both the Senior Open and Women's British Open are also taking place outside of Scotland, meaning there will be less pressure on fans to keep coughing up money. Since staging Scotland's first Ryder Cup for more than 40 years, Glen Eagles has come under new ownership and have been bought by London-based hospitality group Ennismore from Diego in a reported deal worth over £200 million. So we'll see what happens next year or later this year when Keith Pelley starts announcing what's going to happen with the BMW PGA Championship. But definitely I'm sure that Keith is not going to hurt the Solheim Cup by putting their flagship event just opposite the Solheim Cup. And finally, Michelle Wee. We mentioned that she had to withdraw from the Canada Pacific Women's Open, who was tied for 23rd after third round and was withdrawn to have surgery to remove her appendix. Well, after that stunning withdrawal and appendix surgery on Sunday, it was announced yesterday that she will miss at least 2 weeks while she recovers. Her management team said that via Golf Channel yesterday. The final major of the LPGA Tour season is September 14th to the 17th in France at the Evian Championship. We have finished in the top 20 in three of the first four majors this year, so there is obvious impetus to get back healthy over the next few weeks. But the reality is that she won't be making the overseas trip. She needs really 3 to 4 weeks to recover, not two. That's a tough break for her. I mean, she has battled illnesses and injuries throughout her career and just can't seem to catch a break health-wise. A bit of surgery was not enough to douse her enthusiasm, as she posted a positive message on her Instagram account on Monday, thanking her medical staff and proclaiming her intent to be back on the tee, as she said, and I quote, "As soon as the doctors clear me to play," with 2 exclamation points. Fred, whether she's able to do that remains to be seen. All we know for now is that she had successful surgery and will attempt to be healthy enough to tee it up in France. But, Fred, I really, really doubt it.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty quick, I would think. I mean, it's not major surgery for sure anymore. He used to be, but it's not a big deal today. But that seems pretty quick to be back at it full strength. So, and plus traveling clear to France. So we'll see. Hey, Carlos, Tiger Woods was in the news this week for a couple of reasons. President Cup Captain Steve Stricker said that Tiger would be one of his vice captains for the upcoming competition at the President's Cup. There were also some other news. Some rather revealing photos popped up of Tiger and his former girlfriend, Lindsey Vonn, that went viral last week. The former power couple, Woods and Vonn, literally got caught with their pants down, showing much more than is allowed in polite society. Although Woods and Vonn severed their relationship back in 2015, explicit nude photos were hacked and stolen from Vonn's phone of the couple's activity back when they were still together. Several celebrities' phones, it wasn't just Vonn's, had been hacked, and other celebrities have threatened lawsuits if Google didn't take the photos down. A smut site had posted them and was drawing viral views. The website has been shut down, but not before everyone got more than an eyeful of Tiger and Lindsey sans outerwear. Seems like Tiger just can't stay out of the news, but for all the wrong reasons. Carlos, I think that's all I'm going to say about this issue, except to add that perhaps global golf host Steve Eubanks said it best on Facebook. If you take your britches off near a camera, bad things are going to happen 100% of the time. So, Carlos, take a lesson. Don't be like Tiger. Be careful what you put on your phone and keep your pants on at all times.
I don't think anybody would like to see anyway me if that would happen. They would immediately demand for the pictures to be taken out of the internet.
Get the delete.
They will be, yeah, please take them down out right now. So I'm not even worried. So anyway, yeah, I have a friend that he told me, did you see them? And I went like, no, what? The photos from Tiger and Lindsey. What about them? They broke up like 3 years ago. No, their phone got hacked. They were naked. They were like, what are you seeing Tiger Woods naked for? And she said, no, I was seeing Lindsey. Oh, wow, man. Incredible. Well, and he said, I asked him, why, man? And he said, well, you know, it was just research. I just wanted to make sure that it was her. Yeah, right. Yeah,
that's unfortunate.
All investigative reporting that he was doing there.
Investigative journalism.
Yeah. Journalism, yes, that's right. That's right, because he didn't report about it. He was just investigating. So anyway, PGA Tour and other financial announced last week a new event to be contested in Grand Blanc beginning next year. The Alley Challenge will debut the week of September 10th to the 16th next year at longtime PGA Tour venue Warwick Hills Golf and Country Club, which hosted the Buick Open for 45 years through 2009. The tournament will feature $2 million in purse with three-year agreement in place through 2020. Ally Financial Chief Marketing and Public Relations Officer Andrea Riley, PGA Tour Champions President Greg McLaughlin, Tournament President Trent Marshall, Tournament Director Chris Kaufman, and World Golf Hall of Fame member Mark O'Meara were the featured speakers at the announcement in Grand Blanc. Ally, which has a long history there in Detroit, is a leading digital financial services company. Ally offers innovative financial products for consumers, businesses, automotive dealers, and corporate clients, and has an award-winning online banking offering deposits, credit cards, and home loan products, one of the largest full-service auto finance operations in the country. And the PGA Tour and its tournaments are glad to have him because they have donated more than $166 million, and this is the PGA Tour, to charitable causes last year, in turn bringing the all-time total generated to over $2.46 billion since 1938. That is just outstanding. I mean, out of here. That $2.46 billion have been donated by the PGA Tour since 1938. And the net proceeds from the Ally Challenge will benefit one or more qualified 501c3 nonprofit organizations in the greater Flint area. This tournament will mark the sixth new event announced by the PGA Tour champions over the past 2.5 years and becomes the newest staple on a schedule that currently features tournaments in 4 countries and 18 states. If you don't know a little bit about the Warwick Hills, it was designed in 1957 by noted architect Joe Lee, hosted the PGA Tour's best players for nearly half a century, delivering champions such as Tiger Woods, Billy Casper, and Julius Boros, as well as current PGA Tour champions players Fred Couples, Vijay Singh, Hill Irwin, and Kenny Perry, just to name a few. Mark O'Meara, who's a 16-time PGA Tour winner and was inducted in the World Golf Hall of Fame 2015, made 18 career starts at Warwick Hills, where he notched 4 top 10 finishes, including a runner-up effort to Woods in 2002. The event will be managed by H&S Sports Group, with Kaufman serving as the tournament director. Tournaments for Charity, which is a 501c3 owned and operated by H&S, will serve as the tournament's host organization. And the Ally Challenge will be one of the premier regular season events on the PGA Tour Champions next year, which will give way to the third annual Charles Schwab Cup Playoffs, which is a season-ending 3-tournament series used to determine the tour season-long champion. And Fred, all 3 rounds of the Ally Challenge will be broadcast on Golf Channel.
Yeah, this is great. Got another event coming to Michigan. It's wonderful. Happy for that. But Warwick Hills, give me a break. There's a lot better courses in Michigan to host a PGA event than Warwick Hills. So more power to them. Hope it does well.
Hey, really, one question, Fred. Why would you say, I mean, where would you stage it other than that one? I mean, it was a staple there in the PGA Tour until 2009. So I believe that would be the reason, because it already has all the logistics. It was easier for that. But you really don't see it as a good golf course to be holding
I'm sure it's okay. There are better. There are much better choices in central Michigan, within 50 miles of there. Better courses, I would think better facilities. It's okay. It's fine. I'm sure it'll be great. And they had tournaments there before, so they know what they're doing. But, man, there's some great golf courses in Michigan, and that is not anywhere near my top 10. So,
It would be, maybe it's not a good, it's not as good as those that you're saying, but I think that one of the main benefits for this is that, that Flint area really needs a lot of help. And nonprofit organizations there are going to be benefited by this. So I think that might have been maybe the determining factor on that, because, like I mentioned, there is going to be a lot of involvement by the 501c3 nonprofit organizations there. So I think that area needs a lot, maybe more than all those other areas, and maybe that's the reason why.
Yeah, I'm curious to go to it. I will try and go to it. It should be fine. It's not that far from here. I can, I have places to stay up there, so that's not a problem. But I'm curious to see how it does, actually. On a side note, a little funny note, we had the interview with Ben Wright on last week, and when we were talking at dinner, we were talking about some of his favorite places to go to view, to watch golf tournaments, to broadcast golf tournaments. And you know, of course, there was Pebble Beach and, you know, the Masters and, you know, a couple of different places. And I jokingly said, and I imagine the Buick Open at Warwick Hills was probably right at the Flint was probably right at the top of your list. He just laughed. He didn't even answer that. So, I more power to him. I hope it works out well. Hey, Carlos, speaking of kind of helping inner cities and areas that have been downtrodden and maybe need a little help, the Bridge Foundation in New York, their mission is to use the game of golf to improve life outcomes for young men of color. Blending golf with STEM, S-T-E-M, learning, mentoring, and character education, we believe our young men can close gaps in achievement, learning, and opportunity. Well, they're doing just that and bringing inner city kids the opportunity to learn the game of golf and compete with other city golf teams. They have a year-round learning center in Harlem. The center's PGA teaching professionals and state-of-the-art technology helps develop golfing skills and a love for the game of golf. 2 years ago, Juan Cortereal had never held a golf club, but now he's competing with other high school golf teams. Although he has yet to win a match, he's having the time of his life and will continue to play golf long after his high school days are over. In addition to learning to play golf, Juan and his teammates study science, math, and character building in the program. Juan and his brother attend Eagle Academy that is partnered with the Bridge Foundation to provide the after-school golf and learning programs. The idea is to make learning fun and introduce minority children to other sports that they might not normally have the opportunity to play. The program seems to be working. The kids are improving their test scores and preparing for secondary education and life after school. What better way to teach a kid and help him to learn than golf, along with his other school studies? I love this program, Carlos. I hope it continues and expands to other communities.
And with that, we're wrapping up the Part 5 News. Now, we're up for, let's change it. Let's put the VIG and then let's talk a little bit about the practice range. So, Fred, let's play now the interview between America's golfing couple, Danny and Alice Scott, who have been to the most of the great golf resorts around the world. They write about their journeys and can give a thorough perspective on each destination from both the man and the women's point of view. So this should be interesting, Fred. Tell us about this.
Yeah, I got to meet Danny and Alice Scott last week in our trip around Michigan. Delightful couple. And had a lot of fun hanging out with them. And so I thought we would just do a short interview and let them tell us a little bit about some of their favorite places and what they thought of some of the Michigan resorts we covered. And then when we get done, Carlos, I want to just give a quick overview of the trip last week before we get into the practice range then.
So we have, like we said, the VIG, and we have a chip shot from Fred. So don't go away. Let's play now the interview with Danny and Ali Scott.
We are here at Grand Traverse Resort in Traverse City, Michigan. We are talking with America's golfing couple, Danny and Alice Scott, and they have been everywhere, done everything, got the T-shirt, and we're happy to be talking to them today on Back 9 Report.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Listen, we just spent a couple days traveling around Michigan together. I know you guys have been here before, seen other resorts, but what were your impressions on this trip of where we were and what we saw?
Well, I just love the inn at Bay Harbor. It reminded me of the Hotel Coronado, Del Coronado, but the ocean is much more active here. Even though it's not an ocean, it's a lake. It looks like an ocean. When the storms come up, the waves were high. I love the water all over the state. One lake runs into another, and I could go lake hopping for a whole summer here in Michigan.
I find that Michigan has probably the most courses I've seen in such great shape, great routing. It's just a wonderful golf area that people should discover.
One of the places we got to visit was Tom Doak's Loop at Forest Dunes, which just opened last year. So it's just really not even a two full years yet of being open. What were your impressions of that unique feature?
I think it's a great concept. I think it would save a lot of courses time, money, and the experience that the golfers will have, they'll really treasure that. I think it's something that's deemed for the future of other golf courses.
Yeah, it's a walk-only course, and we love walking. It's kind of reminiscent of Ireland or Scotland when you are walking, and they do have terrific caddies to go along with you, or you can push a cart, and it's just a walk in the pines. It reminded me a little bit of the Sandhills in North Carolina around Pinehurst, except instead of the straw pines, you have the tall jack pines here.
Yeah, exactly. And Alice, being the female partner in this relationship, you bring a unique perspective of the women's golf game, and how that relates. And so, the courses that you played, you feel they're female friendly here that we are on this week?
Absolutely. You know, there's a segment of women golfers that are what I refer to as super divas that might not appreciate on a couple of the courses that there was a porta potty. But frankly, I appreciate that there's a porta potty and not just the trees. So, and otherwise, the forward tees have been very generous on all of the courses. There were but a few that couldn't make it in regulation. I hit the ball fairly well for a female, but I think that, here's something that is extraordinarily different about the pro shops. They have a wide selection of apparel, and I think maybe that's partly because there aren't any PGA Tour superstores or Dick's Sporting Goods around, but these shops are stocking up well for women, and the women are buying.
Well, in two of the places we were at, Boyne Properties, there's three here in northern Michigan or in the Petoskey area, and then here at Grand Traverse, are very family-friendly. They want you to bring the kids and the whole family because there's so many activities away from the golf course also. We didn't have much time to explore those this trip, but next time you come, hiking, biking, swimming, all those kind of things. So you guys have been everywhere other than Michigan. What are maybe a couple of the destinations that you just can't wait to get back to?
Well, if you're talking worldwide, South Africa was the most impactful for me. The Indian Ocean meets the Atlantic Ocean, so the Gulf, oceanside, seaside, is very dramatic. And then you've got the safaris. I mean, to see the first baby rhino, as humans, to be the first humans to see the baby rhino out in the wild, and the giraffes and all of that, that was a unique experience that I really long to go back to South Africa.
Probably Spain or Ireland, to get back to those two. The people are just incredibly friendly. They have a passion for golf. The food is great. The Guinness is good. But Spain and Portugal is just very laid back. It's very inviting. They really make you feel welcome there. So that's two of the destinations I'd like to get back to.
And you know, Fred, there are many, many places we haven't been yet.
But we also tell a lot of people, you know, sure, there's a lot of international destinations, but we are trying to get out the word to rediscover America. There's some great places in America that people's never been, and instead of taking that trip overseas, for the next couple of years, just hang here in the United States. There's some great places to visit.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. We've been talking with America's golfing couple, Danny and Alice Scott. And if they wanted to read about your travels and learn more about you, where's the best place to find you guys?
Well, we have our own website, which is americasgolfingcouple.com, but we also are featured on golftravelweekly.com and mynegm.com. We have a monthly column there.
Fantastic. You're also on Twitter and Facebook. Just if you type in Alice Scott or type in America's Golfing Couple, you'll find them and follow them and watch their travels and see where the great places to go are in the golf world. So thanks again for coming in to Back 9 Report, guys.
Thanks, thank you, Fred. It's such a pleasure to have met and played with you this week.
And it was great winning money with Fred as my partner yesterday.
I didn't help much, but thanks a lot, guys.
What? We got some insight there. You have to follow through and tell us all about that. I mean, money involved, Fred? What was that?
Yeah, we play for a dollar or two here. It's nothing too major, but I didn't help much. I got to tell you, I played with Danny the final round. We played 36 holes the last day, and so this was the seventh round in 6 days. Plus, we packed up and traveled around to three different hotels. So they're long days, and with a lot of you meet a lot of people, you do a lot of stuff, and we played the Jack Nicklaus, the course, the Bear at Grand Traverse, and Danny and I partnered. We were the old guys against two young guys, and it was a close match. Danny played extremely well, and I just kind of followed along. I ran out of gas on like 12 or 13 on the back nine. But Danny kept playing hard, and we ended up winning a couple bucks from the other guys. So it was a lot of fun. We really had a great time, enjoyed it a lot. But, Carlos, let me give you a quick overview of what we did last week. Our first stop was at Forest Dunes, as I mentioned. You mentioned there in the piece. The Weisskopf course at Forest Dunes opened for play in 2005, and until last year was the only golf course at Forest Dunes. And if it was the only course, it was wonderful. It's a great track. It's a joy to play. The greens are some of the best and fastest greens you'll ever play anywhere. But last year, Tom Doak's Loop, the reversible 18-hole course, it's walking only. It is a throwback to the way golf used to be. It opened in June of last year, so it's just a little bit over a year old. And a unique concept. We got to play it both ways on two separate days. And it's really cool. I love playing it. I really do enjoy it a lot. The other thing there at Forest Dunes, the lodges and accommodations are first class. The restaurant serves a varied menu of delicious options. You can sit outside and eat. It's really good stuff there. Also, they have a nice big patio, and later in the day they fire up the huge fire pit, and you go out there with your scotch or your cigar, and boy, you look out over the lake and out over to the other course there. It's really a beautiful way to end your day. Then we made our way over to Petoskey, and we stayed a couple nights at the Inn at Bay Harbor, which is in the Petoskey area in northern Michigan. And Boyne encompasses three resorts there. There's the Mountain, the Highlands, and the Inn at Bay Harbor that has the Bay Harbor Golf Club. So all three locations include 10 golf courses in total, which gives golfers a variety of configurations and courses to play all within about a 20-mile radius. We stayed at the beautiful Inn at Bay Harbor, and it's truly one of the best hotels to be found anywhere. My room was like a small apartment. I could live in there for a long time, no problem. We were able to play the Heather course at Boyne Highlands. It was the first course that was there at the Boyne Resort. It was designed by Robert Trent Jones. We also stopped into the Boyne Golf Academy there for a quick lesson and a short intro to their Gears training program from David McWhorter. Our friend Mike Fay also is involved with that. He was out working with a first tee group while we were there, so he wasn't able to work with us that day, but we did get to talk to him for a minute. The Bay Harbor Golf Club is made up of three separate nine-hole courses. There's the Preserve, the Lynx, and the Quarry that can be mixed and matched for play. We happen to play the Lynx Quarry on this trip, and the views from the Lynx course, I got to tell you, Carlos, you look out over Little Traverse Bay, and you're above the Inn at Bay Harbor. I took some pictures. I posted on Facebook. It's so gorgeous. You look over the marina. I mean, just the views alone, playing the Lynx course, is well worth the price of the green fees alone. Next, we headed south a few miles along the Grand Traverse Bay to Grand Traverse Resort in Traverse City. It's been around for several years, has hosted high-profile tournaments. It has three 18-hole golf courses. We played the Wolverine, designed by Gary Player, and then the Bear by Jack Nicklaus. I would recommend any first-time visitors to Grand Traverse Resort warm up on the Wolverine course. Gary Player designed a course for the average golfer that is pleasing to the eye. It's challenging, but accommodates a missed shot here and there. The Bear may be the most visually intimidating golf course from the tee box that I've ever played. If you're looking for a true test of your golf game, visit the Bear at Grand Traverse. There's forced carries, rolling fairways, and deep bunkering, as well as revetted walls that lay in the path of down in the fairway off your drive. Jack has allowed plenty of room to hit the ball, but when you look out from the tee, it's hard to see anything but trouble. Did I mention that the hotel is world-class with a spa and retail shops located on the first floor? The Airy restaurant sits on the 16th floor and provides stunning views of East Traverse Bay, and it's also a great place to catch a sunset over the Old Mission Peninsula. Don't forget, for the golfer that likes some nighttime entertainment, Little Turtle Casino is only a couple miles away, and the hotel provides a shuttle back and forth. With the expanding wine industry, microbreweries, and other activities in the summer months at Traverse City, you're never going to be wanting for something to do. So, Carlos, Forest Dunes, the Boyne properties up at Petoskey, Grand Traverse Resort, three great resorts in Michigan. We got to see them last week. It was a real pleasure.
And with that, we'll wrap up our VAG and our chip shot. So, Fred, let's go on now for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic, and each of us take our own shots at it. This week, we picked up again the television's ratings decline, and we're going to do a quick roundabout about some of the topics that surround this that we think is maybe a decline. Is it, isn't it? Well, you'll judge after what we have to say. But Fred, you have the first shot at it. Is it because there's no more key names? I mean, like DJ, Spieth, Rory, Jason Day, Ricky. And how does it compare to the eras before, where there was Jack Arney and Gary Player, or Jack and Johnny and Tom Watson, Greg Norman, or even the biggest one of them all, Tiger Woods? What do you think?
Well, in addition to the declining golfing population, without Tiger Woods to bring more than just hardcore golf fans to the game, the PGA Tour and golf in general is losing the casual sports fans from its viewing audience. With so many options available on network, cable, and internet sites, golf needs a major name to step forward and make sports fans want to watch just to see what he's going to do next. Think Michael Jordan. Even people who were not NBA fans would watch Michael to see what amazing gravity-defying feat he was going to pull off next. Even non-golf fans would watch the amazing shots that Tiger Woods would attempt. Plus, his frequency of winning tournaments, especially majors, captured sports fans' imaginations. Everyone wanted to say they watched the greatest of all time. We can't say that right now. Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, and Rory McIlroy are very good. They're the big five of golf for sure. But they're not winning often enough to gain fan popularity at a rapid rate. Over time, we've also had great head-to-head competitors, which captured new golf fans. Jack versus Arnie, Jack versus Gary, Jack Arnie and Gary Player, Jack versus Johnny Miller. Then there was Tom Watson. Then there was Greg Norman dominating on tour in the 80s. All drew more eyeballs to golf. We don't have that great rivalry or that big name or that marquee name right now. We maybe saw a preview of what could be last week at the Northern Trust with a battle between Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson. You've got the long versus short, strength versus accuracy, the perpetual conundrum of golf. Spieth's Madison Avenue good looks and outgoing personality can play the perfect white hat, good guy to Dustin Johnson, brush with drugs, don't give a damn swagger, and 300-plus yard drives into the stratosphere that makes him the perfect bad guy in the black hat. Could be a match made in heaven for television, the PGA Tour, and golf in general. Of course, the ideal matchup would be Jordan Spieth versus Rory McIlroy. You got Europe versus U.S., both young guys, personable, great players. This could go on for a long time if they would happen to win every other major and begin a major arms race for claret jugs, green jackets, and Wanamaker trophies. So, Carlos, I really think we're just kind of in a lull, but we're like between the storms right now. We're after Tiger. We're looking for the next. Will it be one of these five guys? Will some young guy come up from the pack and capture everyone's imagination? We're just kind of in a lull. We've got great golf. We've got some good guys, but not anybody that really captures the imagination right now.
You know, I disagree. I totally disagree because, to me, yes, we've had Tiger Woods. We've had, like you said, Greg Norman. We've had Jack, Arnie, and Gary before, Tom Watson at some point. But I don't think the problem is that there is no marquee name because people, and that might be my next topic about poor golf, is it poor golf or not? I don't think so. I think the problem is that we are not seeing enough good plays at the end of the tournaments. Like this week, it was amazing. And I know you and I disagreed about the Open, but I have to really go back at it. Jordan Spieth versus Matt Kuchar, who gave up before he started that final round, and that was his news, versus DJ, who came back from three down. He never said, I'm going to back up. Oh, this is over. I mean, nobody's going to touch Jordan Spieth. No, heck no. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to bomb everything away. And Spieth did the same thing that happened in the Open. The only difference this time, he had somebody that stepped up and went out and played him.
Yeah,
and
that's
said
the point.
I said it before. Spieth is the biggest competitor there is in golf. There's no one more competitive than him. And it showed. I mean, I saw that 18 hole when he made that putt from outside. I mean, the 72nd hole, which was the 18th, when he made that putt and got it closed, the swagger, the way that he did it. Because he said, like, I know, Dustin, you're not going to make that last one. Go ahead. I have the par putt right there close. Go ahead. Make my day. Sink that par putt. DJ came back. Boom. Sink it. Playoff going. Hey, match on. That's what people like to see. They don't really care if it's a great guy, if it's a bad guy. They want to see good golf, and that's what I think is not happening right now. We're not seeing enough consistency from the golfers to have all every day on the final rounds to have that show. People like those mano-a-mano. Why the Olympics was so good? Because they had Justin Rose. They had Henrik Stenson. And it's not about the young guys only. We've seen old guys like those two, and what a matchup that was. We saw Sergio in the Masters, the way that he did it. I mean, we've seen it on and on and on and on. When there is competition on that final round, people watch. But that's the problem. I don't think there's good enough golf being played. It's not about the marquee names. Because I've talked to people, and they really, well, that was so-so final round. It doesn't matter who's playing it. It's not like I know what the example that you gave about Michael Jordan, but that's the same thing that's happening to the NBA right now. They are trying to push LeBron James so far. I mean, they are the ones that have made the LeBron James the biggest player of all time now because of all the – they wanted to substitute Michael Jordan with somebody. And they've been trying to do the same thing with Tiger Woods. Nobody's going to substitute Tiger Woods. No one. There's no one – anywhere that's going to be even close to him. Stop. If the PGA Tour wants to really get back to this and the golf wants to get back into the ratings, get better golf at the end of each final round, Fred.
I'm going to argue the next Tiger Woods is coming. Every generation, every 20 years or so, we have someone that steps up and is just a little bit better than everybody else. You can go back to Ben Hogan, Byron Nelson, and Sam Snead. You can go to Arnold Palmer, then to Jack, Greg Norman, and then to Tiger. So the next Tiger Woods is out there, and I think he's coming. I don't know that he's in this crop of guys that we have right now. We have some good players. And Carlos, look at all how many 59s and even a 58 that have been posted events within the past couple of years. You know, the golf has been pretty good, except like you said, maybe they're a little boring on the last round. Somebody doesn't, you know, the matchups aren't there. So I don't know. I think the next Tiger Woods is out there. We just haven't seen him yet. He's coming. So Carlos, you know, let's talk a little bit about, is it declining fan base? Well, you know, since the recession of 2009-2010, of course, participation in golf has declined. The number of golfers now involved has dropped over 5 million since the heyday prior to 2009. And, oh, yeah, that also coincides with Tiger Woods' last major win in 2009 U.S. Open. Injuries and personal problems ended his career, and golf lost the casual golf fan that watched Tiger Woods. Millennials have not taken up the game in the numbers that previous younger generations have. When they leave college, get real jobs, and start to raise a family, biking, running, and other outdoor activities shared with the family are taking precedent. Courses and the golf industry are trying to reach out to this group, but until they age a little more and can't be as active and are looking for a little more or less stressful physical activity, they're not going to become golfers. And, Carlos, I think the problem goes even just a little bit deeper. Golf has gained a certain exclusive stigma over the years, and young people of today are rebelling against that perception. Golf club memberships are comprised of fairly old people who are reluctant to open their doors, make exceptions to new members, and welcome families to their clubs. To me, this is a real dilemma. Private clubs want to remain exclusive. Younger people do not feel welcome, and golf in general is the real loser. So, you know, I think it goes a little bit deeper. The overall problem, it's a multifaceted thing. It's just not one thing you put a finger on, but I think these are some of the issues also, Carlos.
On that, I have to agree. Yeah, I think that there is a multi-phase thing here. It's not just one thing that we can pinpoint, and that is going to be it, which takes me to my next topic. Is it because now there's more ways to watch? If there's live streaming, you can see it from the tablet to the computer, smartphone, anywhere that you have internet access, you can watch it. So why watch it on the TV? I mean, also there's this that we have been discussing as well, the cable cutting. Is it that the reason why TV ratings are declining? I would like to stop thinking or calling it TV ratings then. Let's call it about broadcasting. Because the problem is that, yes, there's people now watching in the tablets and the computers and the smartphones, but we are really not getting the enough numbers to really see if it's being transferred. I would like to see a real study about how much people are now watching live streaming, whether it's on a tablet, computer, smartphone, whatever it is. I want to see that and compare it to the TV ratings and if it matches the amount of people that have been watching before. I would say it's even right now because you even said it. You went now in this past week and you said, hey, golf is alive and well. You said that, and you're not the only. It's not the first time that you say it, and you're not the only one that I hear saying that. I mean, you go to a golf club and you see a lot of people playing. I mean, so hey, where is that declining fan base, and what's the problem then? Why people are not watching? Like you said, I think we have to go deeper than that. I don't think people are. You can just say it's because the golf ratings are really declining. No, let's see how many people you're transferring because a lot of those millennials right now, they use their tablets, they use their smartphones to watch a lot of things. So they might be watching there. There's a lot of people that might be doing other things. I don't just want to be – sometimes I haven't been at home to watch the tournament. I'm watching it on the phone. I started on the TV. I disconnected. I went on the car, kept watching on the phone. So that they didn't lose me as a as a fan or as a follower watching that tournament. So I don't think we can say that it's because of that. I think that that is adding the possibility of more people really watching it.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with that. I know myself. We don't have cable up at our cottage, and so when I'm there on the weekend, a lot of times I'm watching on my computer or on my phone. I'm still watching, but I'm not really watching it on TV because we have kind of a limited thing there. You know, we just have the Roku there. We don't have a full network capability. So. I do watch quite a bit actually myself on live streaming. And then another issue for me, Carlos, is there too much golf on TV? You've got the Golf Channel, you've got the network, and plus now you've got Fox. You know, how much golf can we watch? With the USGA on Fox, it adds one more competitor for NBC, CBS, and Golf Channel. They all broadcast in the same time slot. One week, we had the LPGA Champions Tour and PGA Tour all on at the same time on different channels. The USGA doesn't care if it's competing against the PGA Tour or the LPGA because they're getting $100 million each year from Fox. But Fox should because they need the eyeballs, the viewers, so they can sell the advertising slots. They're losing potential viewers to other channels because of their scheduling. In addition, people are more mobile. They're not tied to their couches. They're watching coverage, as we mentioned, on their devices. I really think golf should step back and consider, you know, maybe less is more. The USGA, PGA Tour, and LPGA Champions Tour, as well as the European Tour, need to sit down and hammer out a schedule that doesn't conflict with each other on network cable and internet video. Most of the time, European Tour is good because they're in the mornings. And if you want to catch something, watch the European Tour until American golf starts in the afternoon or into the evening. I mean, this is going to be difficult. It's really difficult because there are only so many daylight hours every week, and these events must be held. But I really think the market is somewhat oversaturated right now, especially since the addition of the USGA events on Fox.
I'm always saying that wraparound schedule, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Take that part away. Nobody's watching anyway. Football, you cannot compete with football here. There's no way you're going to do that. Do something else. I don't know, just take that away. Even the players, I think, would agree. Less would be better for them. A lot of them, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, we don't know about a lot of the injuries that they're battling through just because they have to play. Look at Jimmy Walker's example. He had to battle through that illness that he had and finally had to shut it down because he just couldn't play, and then he's back now. But hey, he's worse for the wear. He's just, this year is lost for him. But yeah, I think that too much golf, they should really slow it down and get a little bit less. And people will really want to see it again once they, hey, I need golf again. It's just like every other sport has its off season. Golf doesn't have one. And I have to agree on that. I think there's a lot there. Fred, any final words on the practice range television ratings decline before we go on to our final pods?
No, I think we covered pretty much everything, Carlos. You make a good point with the fall series and, you know, the guys going to Australia and Asia to play in the fall for appearance fees and stuff. And those are fine. I mean, those would put in a slot, but now when you throw in these fall events, again, we've got golf nonstop with the European Tour stretching out into December, the web.com, the fall series going on. So, it almost gets to be too much.
It really does. And with that, we wrap up our practice range every week. Fred and I pick a topic, and this week it was the television ratings decline. Hope you enjoyed it. And now let's do our final pods. Let me start talking about Lucas Glover. You know, he doesn't like attention. But he received plenty of it Saturday afternoon at the Northern Trust while sprawled on the 18th fairway after straining the patellar tendon on his right knee. While he was hitting a hard 5-iron on his second shot, Glover's right foot slipped on the dry bent grass, and he buckled to the ground. He said he felt a twinge, not a pop, but wasn't sure if he could put on weight on his knee. In a scene that was more befitting of a football game than a golf tournament, I mean, he was attended by medics, marshals, caddies, and a playing partner, Grayson Murray, was even looking on. I mean, even local policemen were in the scene. I mean, what happened? Somebody shot him? Following that lengthy delay, Limping Glover managed to finish his round with a bogey and a 2-over 72, leaving him at 2-over in a tie for 52nd place, going into the final round at Glen Oaks. I mean, it looked scary, but he did play on Sunday and shot a 71 to finish T40. And will play this weekend, so he's doing good apparently, or at least that we know he's going to be doing good enough to try to give it a try this week. And on my final pod, hey, two major winners have been added to an increasingly star-studded field for the New Zealand Women's Open. American golfers Paula Creamer and Danielle Kang have both signed on to play at the first LPGA tournament to be held in New Zealand. Creamer will lend her name recognition to the event as one of the most famous and long-tenured female golfers, and who is in decent form as of late after slipping in the rankings, while Danielle is one of those new, exciting new wave of young players on the LPGA who's on top of her game after winning the PGA Championship a few weeks ago. And both are coming from outstanding performances on the Solheim Cup, which have added to the recognition on the tournament. For the additions of King and Creamer, the New Zealand Open will now boast a field that has 16 major championships won between them. Yanni Tseng has won 5, Lydia Ko 2, Brittany Lincecum 2. They are all major multiple winners, while Brooke Henderson, Katrina Mathieu, Nyeon Choi, Ihi Yi, and Hyo-Yu Kim has also raced a major trophy.
Carlos, as you know, the USGA and the RNA are considering several new rules changes to make the game move faster and make it more golfer-friendly. They've posted those to their website, and if you want to add your 2 cents on these new proposed changes, you have a couple more days until August 31st to do so. The website is... you can go to USGA.org and find it. It's snapsurveys.com. All you need to do is choose the language that you want to complete the survey in and go to it. So, good news on the Jared Lyle front. He reported via Twitter that he is once again in remission for his third battle with leukemia. Nothing on when he might pick up a golf club again or if he ever will, but this is great news for the golfing community. Lyle has had a history of battling cancer, and he has come through again. Congratulations to him and his family. Cell phones are now allowed at PGA and European Tour events. Who said golfers are just stodgy old guys who are set in their ways? Not me, and not the PGA and European Tour, as they added the new policy. They're catching up with the times. After all, it is the 21st century. Billy Payne said there'd be no phones during the Masters. While he was in charge, I wonder if new chairman Fred Ridley will consider a change to that now that he's running the show. The new policy did have a few drawbacks last week for its first week in effect. As evidenced at the Northern Trust last week, dozens of competitors, most notably Spieth and John Rahm, had to back off from a shot due to clicks. This is especially problematic as the crowds were relatively thin at Glen Oaks. If a group of 60 spectators, you know, that's about all that followed the marquee names around the first couple of days, was able to cause a distraction. What's going to happen at a big event that boasts a large following? To their credit, the players brushed aside most of the problems, and they're expressing hope that the issues will be smoothed out in the upcoming weeks. A few caddies mentioned better enforcement from marshals and officials would be enough to solve the problem. So, for better or worse, the prevalence of handheld devices is here to stay, and with golf's initiative to reach new audiences, turning its back to this notion is fatal. Launches are never smooth sailing, and the tour will learn from last week's feedback. Golf will eventually reach you know, a fine tune with the matter, but don't be surprised if an incident or two pops up along the way. And finally tonight, Carlos, we would be remiss if we didn't give a mention about Hurricane Harvey and the Houston and Southeast Texas area. We want to reach out to the people in Southeast Texas affected by the massive rains and flooding from Hurricane Harvey. Mike Bailey wrote a piece for Golf Advisor about the flooding damage to the golf courses in the Houston area from Hurricane Harvey. It will have a huge effect on the golf industry in that area for several months, as flooding has damaged nearly every course. Quoting from the article, among the 200 golf courses in the Houston area, it would be impossible to find one that hasn't suffered flood damage. Most of these courses won't reopen for weeks, if not months. Some may not reopen at all. As this isn't the first time around for many of them, and this time it may be too much. In 2001, the Houston area received more than 36 inches of rain in 3 days from Tropical Storm Allison. At the Clubs of Kingwood, where much of the movie Tin Cup was filmed, at least one of its 5 courses didn't reopen for another year. Kingwood, a northeast suburb of Houston, wasn't spared this time around either, of course, and it remains to be seen how difficult it will be to bounce back. We know it's just golf, Carlos, but golf employs several thousand people in the area, and their jobs and livelihood will be affected for several months, if not years. And we have a tremendous feeling for the people in Houston and Southeast Texas. We hope everyone weathers the storm down there okay. Mike posted a picture today of blue skies. He said it was the first time he'd seen blue skies since he returned from Michigan on Friday. He got in just before the storms hit. So hopefully they'll get things cleared away down there. But it looks like tremendous devastation, and we have a feeling for them, Carlos.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm here north of Dallas, so I was fortunate enough not to be hit with any of the Hurricane Harvey. But, I mean, everything that I have seen and talked to people at work that have family down there in the south, anywhere from Houston to Port Lavaca to Corpus Christi, Galveston, I mean, everything, especially Houston, the way that it looks submerged, that big city underwater, I mean, it's really something I've never seen before. And it's certainly devastating what is happening. So our thoughts and prayers are going out to everybody there and their families. Hopefully this will, you know, go on. Finally, Harvey's moving away from that area after almost 4 or 5 days of really pouring down. So definitely, like you say, our thoughts and prayer goes to them. Hey, Back Niners, that will wrap up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIGs, very important guest of the week, Americans Golfing Couple, Danny and Ali Scott. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you miss it, hey, check it out on the iTunes or tune in. Also, on Roku TV, a latest episode is out. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
The weather may be cooling down, but the savings are heating up at your local Sears Auto Center. This Labor Day, you can get 4 durable all-season diehard tires and only pay for 3. Plus, you'll also get a $100 Sears award card to use on future purchases. Great savings backed with a 70,000 mileage warranty. Die hard. Don't wait. Visit SearsAuto.com to find a Sears near you and take advantage of this Labor Day sale. Installation required. Exclusions may apply. Offer valid now through September 9th.